Welcome to the podcast called Let's Have a Conversation, hosted by Richard Papa Osler. My name is Richard Osler, and I'm the host of this podcast. I like to pretend all of you are here in my living room. This is being produced in my living room with our producer, Tom Garbutt, and I imagine you all here listening and wanting to understand more about the topics we're talking about. The topic I've chosen to talk about in this podcast is a Mormon faith crisis, something that many people are feeling in the Mormon church. I'd like to talk about my own mini faith crisis that occurred while I was serving as a YSA bishop. I pray that the Spirit will be here to help me communicate the things in my heart. My goal is to help everybody come closer to Christ and to help people come closer to our restored church. The purpose of this podcast is to talk about the complicated things in the Mormon church, but do it from the perspective of me, a faithful, all-in believing Mormon. This podcast, as I mentioned last time, has no fundraising goal. You can't donate to this podcast. There's no organization behind this. It's just simply me and my guests sharing thoughts about complicated topics. I'm not trying to develop a following here. I'm not trying to build something here separate from the church. My goal as a deeply committed Mormon is to help people come unto Christ and find how a restored church can work for them. As I mentioned briefly, the focus of this podcast is a Mormon faith crisis, and I'll talk about my own mini faith crisis. The purpose of doing that is to help those in a faith crisis have better tools on and know how to stay. Most of the people I talk to in a faith crisis, when I ask them, what's your end goal here? Do you want to find a way to stay in the church, or are you looking for a way to leave the church? Most say, I'd like to find a way to authentically stay in the church. And the other focus of this podcast and the reason to do it is some of you may not be in a faith crisis. Most of you probably aren't in the church, but you may be around people that are, and you may be a bit unsure the best way to help them. And so I hope that this podcast helps you to be able to help people, family members, friends, or if you're a local priesthood leader or leader in any way, to be able to help others. The first thing I'd like to do is to introduce a concept about the church. The church, when people say the church, that's kind of a sticky word. That means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I like to think of the church and divide it into different categories, and I think that's important to understand a faith crisis. The first thing about our church that I think of is the gospel of Jesus Christ. The gospel of Jesus Christ is the pure teachings of Christ with all the pure ordinances, the pure organization, that is something yet that's something that hasn't been completely revealed and isn't something that's completely in our restored church. I sometimes compare it to water in a swimming pool that's perfectly pure. The gospel of Jesus Christ is like a perfectly pure swimming pool. Our restored church has the priesthood and the priesthood keys, but its water may not perfectly match and may have some impurities from that pure gospel swimming pool. So the first thing about the church is the gospel that's pure. The second thing I like to talk about under the umbrella of the word church is our restored church. I believe in our restored church, and at the foundation of our restored church are covenants. Covenants that become enabled and active because of the restored priesthood. We call it the covenant path back to God. It starts with baptism and goes through the temple covenants. But our restored church, the foundation of that is the restored priesthood that gives those covenants to have great power in our lives. The next thing I'd like to talk about under the umbrella of the church is the institutional church. That's obviously a different word than the restored church. The institutional church is this organization of people, programs, policies that's meant to implement the gospel of Jesus Christ. The institutional church is not a perfect church. Elder Ballard talked about this in a recent talk at BYU. in November of 27. And he talked about the institutional church is where all our leaders are. And I was I recently was released after serving as a YSA bishop, and I know I made mistakes in that assignment. Elder Ballard, and I quote him now, Elder Ballard addressed a question about how a person can move forward after a church leader has done something that hurts his or her trust. Quote, I know this happens because the Lord has only mortals to work with as he invites us to receive his blessings, ordinances, and words. I can imagine how you feel because we live in a world where people sometimes say hurtful things, misuse the trust that they have been given, and don't always live Jesus' teachings as they should. We are, after all, human. We are fallible, flawed, and imperfect. Elder Ballard asks listeners to remember that at some point in their life, he or she may disappoint or fail others too, whether as letting down a family member, church brother or sister or friend. Elder Ballard recognizes that no one, no father, mother, child, professor, student, missionary, or mission president, to name a few, is perfect. The Lord provided the only real solution to living with other mortals is he asks us to forgive and love one another. Our institutional church is made up of imperfect leaders, and Elder Ballard is acknowledging that. We can be the restored church with the priesthood and the priesthood keys, but our institutional church is imperfect, and we probably need to do a better job of acknowledging that. The institutional church can create great pain in people's lives. Some of the people I talk to, most of the pain in their lives comes from the institutional church and the limitations of the institutional church. So I think it's important to separate the restored church with the priesthood and priesthood keys from the institutional church, and that's where the leaders, the policies, and the programs. And all of these are helping us to come into the gospel, this pure doctrine and pure ordinances that is yet to be fully revealed. Briefly, there's other parts of the church. There's the temporal church, and that's all the buildings and the temples and the parking lots and the church parking structures and all the different temporal things the church has. And that's not a perfect organization either. I remember a mission president talking about his new mission home in Africa, and there's no such thing as a landline, but as a standard procedure, they install a landline jack in the mission home. And so that's just an example where the temporal church lacks pure understanding of the needs of the local church. Now, it can be a restored church with the priesthood and priesthood keys, but the temporal church sometimes makes mistakes, and we need to acknowledge that. So with that as a foundation, the word church divided into those different groups, I'd like to go through a series of tweets that I sent out. I sent them out on a week ago Sunday on the 28th of January. It was 8 different tweets, and I'd like to go through each of those tweets because each of them has a story behind them. In Twitter, you can only do about 280 characters, and so part of the purpose of this podcast is to go through more of the backstory. And once again, this is talking about my own faith crisis. Tweet number one, I'll read it. Some of our best members, through no fault of their own, are in a faith crisis. If they open up, most feel judged or shamed. I'm with you. I experienced my own mini faith crisis while serving as a YSA bishop because of the policy statements. Things have stabilized. I'm all in. Now, there's a lot in that 280-character tweet that I'd like to go over. I believe before my own faith crisis that everybody that had a faith crisis, they were doing something wrong. And if I could just figure out some backstory that they were either sinning or not praying or not reading enough, then I could explain their faith crisis. And that's a narrative that I've certainly heard in the church over my lifetime. I invite everybody to read and pray, but I recognize that some people experience a faith crisis, because I did, even when they're doing everything they're supposed to do. So I think we need to change how we think about faith crisis. The second part of that is most feel judged or shamed if they open up. If we go on the assumption that everybody on a faith crisis is doing something wrong, then if they're courageous enough to open up about their faith crisis, many people, including me, might have judged them and assumed that they needed to do something that they're not doing. Some of the people I've met within a faith crisis are doing more than anybody I've ever known as far as reading and praying and keeping the commandments and going to the temple. So giving those sometimes simple solution marginalizes them and makes them feel misunderstood and not validated. The third part of that first tweet is the policy statements. I experienced my own mini faith crisis over the policy statements. And for those of you that are not aware of the policy statements, in November of 2015, the church released some policy statements regarding same-sex couples. And the part that was the most hard for me of all of that, all of those statements were that children of same-sex couples could receive no ordinances in the church until they were 18 years old and disavowed their parents' lifestyle. And there's some, and I've processed that not in my head. I realize there's some logic in that that I support, and the church doesn't want to do anything to tear families apart. But in my heart, it just didn't feel right. And I felt almost like, in a football team analogy, that there's two sides of a football team lined up across the line from each other, and I almost felt like a member of my own team turned around and just punched me in the gut. I call it a sucker punch, and I just, and no one else on my team sort of knew what to do. The other team, if someone on the other team had sort of given me a sucker punch, everybody on my own team would have rallied. But it was difficult to be on my side of the ball, so to speak, doing everything I could for the cause, and felt like I received a sucker punch. Now, members may not give me permission to feel that. They may say, well, did you really understand the policy statements? Or, well, were you reading enough? And it's just how I felt, and I can't discount how I felt. I'm not asking others to feel like I feel. I share that not to pull you to my way of thinking about the policy statements. I share that not to say I'm not supportive of our leaders, which I am. I'm just sharing how I felt about the policy statements and how difficult it was for me and how difficult it was to feel permission in our Mormon culture the way I felt. Now, I share that as a template for anybody that sort of feels a difficult part of the church in your life. It may not be the policy statements. There's probably 10 or 20 different potential things that could feel this way to you. And I validate how you feel, and I think we all need to validate how everybody feels without judgment. I have never come to peace with the policy statements. I have faith in our leaders. They understand more than I do. After a period of time, and it's been over 2 years, I just elected to move forward as a faithful member. There may be a time when I'm at peace with that, but I try not to think about it. I try not to dwell on it. I try to dwell on the things that are important to me and try to move forward. So just to be clear on the policy statements, I share that just to be honest. I don't share that to be agenda-based, to try to pull you the way I feel, or if you don't feel that way, to say that I don't validate how you feel. It's just how I felt, and I feel like it's important to communicate that. The second part of my tweet, this is tweet number 2 of 7, and I've kind of mentioned this, and I'll read this word for word. For me, it was like a fallen domino, but all my dominoes didn't fall. I have dominoes with roots to the center of the earth. Priesthood, temple covenants, the Book of Mormon. We need to give permission for members to have a fallen domino or two or more. And that was my stake president that gave me that idea of a fallen domino. It's been very helpful for me, and a principle of reaching out to local church leadership that can be very helpful. But that gave me a different paradigm than I'd ever been exposed to in my life in the church. I'm 56 years old, and no one had ever given me permission to have a fallen domino. or the idea that the point of the domino is other dominoes don't fall. And I had to remember the things that I deeply believed in and the things that I've had deep spiritual confirmations about, such as priesthood blessings. I was probably honored as a YSA bishop to give 1,000 priesthood blessings. I continue to give priesthood blessings. God talks through me to his sons and daughters when I give blessings. There is absolutely no doubt of that in my mind. Tweet number 3. The narrative that anyone in a faith crisis is sinning or needs to read and pray more can be very unhelpful and damaging. My mini faith crisis occurred when I was giving everything for the cause and seeing great success, in parentheses, taught and baptized 3 YSA men. One of the blessings of my faith crisis, or my mini faith crisis, is it happened concurrently with one of the most intense service assignments I've ever had as a YSA bishop. I'm partly retired, and so I perhaps had more time to serve. And most nights, Monday through Thursday, as well as Friday and Saturday afternoon, I was interviewing YSAs. And I connected with a broad range of YSAs because of social media and was meeting with many people at that point who were not coming to church, but they felt safe in talking with me. So I realized on one level that I was reading and praying and going to the temple, and a faith crisis can occur to members of our church who are doing what they're supposed to do. And so I hope that's helpful for anyone, especially leaders, that they will validate a faith crisis and recognize that perhaps the person I'm talking to about a faith crisis has done nothing wrong. Perhaps it's a limitation of our institutional church and our ability still yet to not completely match the pure gospel of Jesus Christ. The limitations of our church can generate faith crisis. Not reading, not praying, sinning can generate faith crises. But to categorize it neatly in one compartment can be very difficult for our members. Tweet number 4. I've learned the best thing I can do for those in a faith crisis is to listen, and validate. I'd like to talk about that and using some of the quotes from Elder Ballard. Elder Ballard, in February of 2016, spoke to all the CES religious educators in the church. And he had some wonderful quotes that are helpful for all of us. And I'll start with this quote. This is Elder Ballard speaking. Quote, "Gone are the days when a student asked an honest question and the teacher responded, 'Don't worry about it.' Gone are the days when a student raised a sincere concern and a teacher bore his or her testimony as a response intended to avoid the issue. Gone are the days when students were protected from people who attacked the church. Fortunately, the Lord provided his timely and timeless counsel to you teachers," quote, and as all have not faith, seek ye diligently and teach one another words of wisdom. Yea, seek ye out of the best books words of wisdom. Seek learning even by study and by faith." I think what Elder Ballard is trying to teach the church is that this idea of bearing testimony to solve a faith crisis can be just exactly the wrong thing to do, because it doesn't involve any listening and it doesn't involve any validating. I think it comes out of our missionary mindset. When I was a missionary, we were taught to bear testimony, which I agree with, as people had questions about the church. I think that's helpful and can be the right thing to do. But I think, first of all, we need to listen, and understand. I find when I talk to somebody in a faith crisis and they ask a question, My most immediate reaction is to ask a follow-up question, and then another follow-up question. Often I'll have notes that I'll take of impressions that come to my mind. But instead of sharing those impressions then and sort of turning the conversation to me, a fix-it guy that can solve this faith crisis, I have to be very disciplined and really understand what they're saying, what their faith crisis is about. I have to get on their road and understand exactly where they are. And the only way I know how to do that is to listen, ask follow-up questions. Don't turn the conversation to me. Don't turn the conversation to a conference talk. Listen, understand, and get on their road. Then, once I really understood where they were, and once they felt heard, then I was in a position to help them. Often, the best thing that I could do as a YSA bishop was to just help someone feel heard. Great healing can occur when feeling heard and understood and validated. Yes, sometimes then it was time to give them a conference talk or invite them to do certain things. But often at that point, I'd still ask them, what do you think you should do to solve your faith crisis? Versus me being prescriptive. And it was often fascinating of the impressions that the person in a faith crisis would have regarding what they should do. They often had better ideas than I had. And then they were often much more owning those ideas. So that's a really important, I think, paradigm shift from 10 or 15 years ago on how to handle somebody opening up about a faith crisis. Now we're to tweet number 5 of my 7 tweets. Tweet number 5 is, and I'll read it, validating how one feels doesn't mean we need to agree. I don't believe validating how one feels drives any wedge between them and the church deeper. But we can validate how one feels and the associated pain they may be feeling and experiencing. It is their lived experience. Validating someone and being vulnerable are two things that weren't even in my vocabulary 5 or 10 years ago. But that's so important. And so if someone has a concern about an aspect in the church like polygamy or multiple accounts of the first vision or blacks in the priesthood, I think it's really important to validate how they feel and to help them to be able to be safe in talking about how they feel, even if I don't feel that way. I don't think that somehow drives the wedge further or empowers them to believe that. I think it just helps them feel heard and feel understood. And I don't think a local leader or a family is crossing a line in letting someone talk about how they feel. I look at Christ in the New Testament and where he was always with those that were the most marginalized, those that had the hardest road. And what did he do with all those people? That was a great sign of his acceptance of them. He invited them to dinner, or invited himself to dinner. I call that table fellowship, where he invited everybody and had conversation. So validating doesn't mean we agree. It just means we listen and we acknowledge that that's how they feel. It's everybody's individual lived experience. That's number 5. Number 6 is, and I'll read this one, being of one heart and one mind doesn't mean we sit in a congregation and all have the same uniform feelings about our church. We need to celebrate and embrace our differences. Being of one heart and one mind means we all have a common desire to come into Christ. I've thought a lot about one heart and one mind throughout my life in the church. That comes from Moses, chapter 17, verse 18, and I'll read that. And the Lord called his people Zion because they were of one heart and one mind, and dwelt in righteousness, and there was no poor among them. So I look at one heart and one mind as just everybody that's trying to come under Christ, focused on being righteous and focused on there's no poor. The poor in this scripture may refer to economic poor, but the poor I think Christ wants us to know is we all are a little wounded and we all have some areas where we need help, and the church is meant to be safe for everybody to come. So sometimes one heart and one mind gets weaponized, and somebody will use that against somebody that feels a little different about our church. Perhaps me about the policy statements, or somebody else about this issue or that issue. And if they're really trying to find a way to stay in the church and trying to figure this out, I think we need to give them permission to feel the way that they feel and not use this scripture as a weapon to cause them to feel they don't belong. Certainly, we don't want the church just to work for people that all feel the same. Somehow magically, in their inactive world, they get aligned exactly with how the church feels and they start coming to church. We want people to be in the congregation that have different feelings about our church. I've always felt the congregation needs to be safe for everybody. There's not a belief hurdle or a behavior hurdle. We can save that for the temple. The next quote is the next tweet I sent out, tweet 7, and this is where I get pretty tender-hearted. I'm going to go back and just quote Elder Ballard from his November 2017 remarks at BYU about people in a faith crisis. To family and friends who are less active, Elder Ballard encourages listeners to love them. And then his quote is as follows: please don't preach to them. Your family member or friend already knows the church teachings. They don't need another lecture. What they need, what we all need, is love and understanding, not judging. Share your positive experiences of living the gospel. It's hard to say it better than Elder Ballard has said it. And that's a different way of handling people in a faith crisis. Number 7 is, and I'll read this one, if I could sit across from each of you in a faith crisis with tears in my eyes, I'd tell you that God loves you. You may not be off track. You may not be off plan. This may be part of your glorious and sometimes painful journey with Mormonism. We need you. You are the future of the church. So here I'm in my front room, and I've had hundreds of discussions with those in faith crisis, some that are out of the church in this room. And those have been some of the most tender experiences of my life. And a lot of tears have been shed, and a lot of blessings and prayers have been given. But almost everybody I meet with in a faith crisis does want to find a way to stay. They just want to authentically believe they can feel the way they do and stay. They go to testimony meeting, and sometimes they hear, I know the church is true, 26 straight testimonies, and they feel different than that. So they wonder if they belong. They feel different about some of the aspects of our church. They feel different about the church history. And I just want to tell you, you belong. In D&C, we learn for some it is given to know and some is given to believe. My dear wife, it's been given to know. She knows the church is true. There is no doubt in her mind, in her heart. To me, I believe the church is true. It's our commitment is equally the same. Our desire to live the commandments is equally the same. Our desire to invite other people to come unto Christ is equal the same. We just have different testimonies. I can have, I believe the church is true and be a faithful member and feel like I belong in our congregation. I can also recognize those that have faith crises that you haven't brought this on yourself. sometimes you'll come across something that's been taught different than what you first taught, and you feel that the church hasn't been as honest with you. Some will be a little more dramatic and say, I feel lied to, or I feel the church has whitewashed something. I validate how you feel. Many feel that way. I think we're in a transition time where we're getting to do a better job of teaching a factual history of our church so that our members don't get surprised later on. My own son, our youngest son in seminary, is learning about the complicated parts of church history. He comes home and telling me things that he is learning in a faithful way about complicated issues with a foundation set of principles that will help him that I didn't have and many of you didn't have. And so I think as a church, our institutional church, remember that's the imperfect part of our church, is doing a better job. And the essays are out, the 11 essays. Elder Ballard talks about the importance of everybody reading those essays. He invites the CES instructors and I think all of our local leaders to know those essays like the back of your hand. They talk about the more difficult issues in our church, like race in the priesthood, multiple counts of the first vision. And I think every local church leader should know those essays and have read them because it will help you as you're working with family members and members of your congregation, because you know the messy parts of the church and you have a faithful answer to give as people open up. So those of you that are here in this room, I invite you to stay. You are the future of the church. We need you. I want you to be the future teachers and leaders of my grandchildren. You will come to the church with a much more holistic and complete understanding of our history. Every church has a messy history. Our church is no different. Every church has difficult things. Every church has made mistakes. I think that's part of a church growing and maturing. I bear my belief that this is the restored church. It's the restored church in the sense it has the priesthood and the priesthood keys. I sometimes think our institutional church is like an early adult equivalent where it's stabilized. It's past the sort of difficult teenage years, and it's become very stable and an early adult. But it's a work in process to match the restored church. And I was recently in a meeting where somebody was in a leadership position was talking about why the youth of our church are not attending and why they're falling away, perhaps in a higher percent than 5 or 10 years ago. And that wonderful member talked about how it was the youth that are less faithful and the youth that aren't as strong. And I just deeply disagree with that comment. I think we need to take responsibility as the institutional church that we have made mistakes. Elder Ballard has acknowledged that. And I think our local leaders need to have a sense of vocabulary to do that, because we believe that, and I'm especially talking to you millennials now, but anybody, you're the best of the best. As I've spent time with you millennials, you're wired for kindness and compassion. Your orientation to serving those on the margins is higher than my generation. Yeah, you might be on your phones too much and you might be a little distracted, but I think you're the best of the best. And I think part of our declining activity rate in all of Christian churches, as well as our restored church that I believe in, is limitations of our institutional church. So hang in there while the institutional church improves. I support and sustain our leaders as they're making progress on having the institutional church be better and do a better job of acknowledging faith journeys and not shaming people that feel that way, having our congregations be more healthy so that people can open up. Hang in there. Take it a step at a time. Think of those dominoes with roots to the center of the earth. Think of your experiences that have been faith-promoting. Hold on to those, even though you may have fallen dominoes around that. Find a way to stay in. You may not need to change. You may not be broken. You may not need to be fixed. You may be like me, permanently having fallen dominoes, but all in, committed, and helping other people come into Christ. I know my ability to invite people in the church has only increased. with this new framework of believing in Mormonism. I have more authentic discussions, more honest discussions with people considering the church, and have had more joy as I've seen people join the church. There may be people listening to this podcast that are considering Mormonism as their path. I've met with many that are out considering Mormonism, and I invite you to consider this as the restored church. This doesn't mean it's a perfect church. You may be uncomfortable with things in the church as you consider being baptized. That's okay. Look at the dominoes you believe in. Look at the spirit that you feel as you consider this church. Is it part of your plan to walk into this church, to help this church be a better church? We need you to help this church be a better church. That concludes the end of this podcast. Thank you for listening. In the future podcasts, I want to continue to talk about these subjects in a faithful way. I hope you felt a good spirit as we've spoken tonight. I'd like to begin to invite guests onto the podcast in a couple of these broad issues. I'd like to invite LGBTQ people to share their stories. I know for me, hearing stories help me understand the road they walk on. Fiona Gibbons talks about you can't touch someone's cross or you can't bear one another's burden, part of our baptism covenants, until you kind of know the road they're walking. And for LGBTQ people in our church, we need to understand their road to be able to help lift them, as well as everybody that's struggling, not only in our church, but in society. So thank you for joining us. Look forward to talking to you again. Thank you, Tom, for your help, and have a good day.